KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
To know my name, but now that I'm a dreadlocks man, they don't even know me anymore. Allah, 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 Alabama, the time has come again. Allah, 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 Alabama, they don't even know my name. Don't judge a man by Judgment Day will come, singing Allah, 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 Alabama, the truth has come again. Kings of kings and lords of the Lord, conquering the Lion of Judah saw. Judgment Day will come, singing Allah, 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 Alabama, the truth has come again. Kings of kings and lords of lords, conquering the Lion of Judah song.
You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. On our Facebook group, Teresa Abney posted about her new baby granddaughter, who was named after Teresa's late mother. She writes, "My mother's first name was Edna, which she hated, and her middle name was Marie. In later years, my mother cleverly decided to go by Andy, which was her name spelled backwards." And Teresa says, "I have five sons, two of whom had daughters after my mom's passing, and both wanted to name their daughter after her. Do reversals of name spellings happen regularly? Has it happened to you?" And Grant, there's a word for this kind of thing. It's an anadrome. It's a word that forms a different word when spelled backwards. It's like the word palindrome, but it goes one way rather than both ways.
Right. So when you talk about names spelled backward, Edna becomes Andy, A-N-D-E, and I think of Nevea, which was popular for a while, maybe still is. That's heaven spelled backward.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
We used to joke as a kid spelling our names backward, and Grant is Tanarg, but nobody would use that. What else is out there? What else have people done?
A lot of people chimed in and said that they do know somebody whose name is a word spelled backwards. D.D. Lloyd said, "My niece Noelle was born in the spring, not at Christmas. She was named after her dad, Leon."
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's a nice one. And David Wright said, "I have a second cousin who was named Tara Graham after her grandmother, Margaret."
Okay.
And Kyla Thompson said, "I had a family member named Delora." That's a D apostrophe L-O-R-A-H. They were planning on naming her Harold, so they went for the name backwards.
Oh, wow, that's clever. Delora.
I like that.
Although I guess that, I bet that apostrophe causes all kind of chaos with computer systems.
Yeah, probably does. She has a twin sister who's named Lenora. So Lenora and Delora. I like those.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've always kind of been fond of matching names for siblings, as long as it's not too cutesy.
Right.
But backwards names. Do you know the books and the movie about Enola Holmes?
You know, I've seen that advertised on Netflix, but I haven't gotten into it. Tell me about that.
Well, she makes something of her name Enola being the word alone when you reverse it. And I don't know if she was named because of that. But she, of course, is raised more or less alone as an only child, even though she has older siblings because they're much older. And it's just a little note about her character and personality that Enola is alone when reversed. Good movie, by the way, and interesting books.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check it out. Well, if you know of an anadrome, somebody in your life who has a name that's a word spelled backwards, we'd love to hear about it. 877-929-9673 or send it to us in email. The address is words@waywardradio.com.
Break in for a second. Here's Big Wave. We're going to have another game here at 9:30, so stay tuned.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Well, I had a discussion with my brothers and sisters the other day, and we're talking about mice, not like the animal, but mouse, like the computer mouse. And to me, I said, like, plural was mouses. And I know it sounded weird, but if I hear mice, I think of the animal. And then my sister said, no, it has to be mice. And my computer engineer brother, he said it's like mouse, like just you say 20 mouse. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right. So I decided to call you guys.
So you have three different candidates for the plural of the computer mouse on your desk. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct.
And you go with mouses. You would go online shopping for computer mouses.
That's what I would do. Or if I was talking to somebody, I would go like, oh, yeah, I have five mouses at home. I don't know, something like that. I just feel if I say I have five mice at home, it sounds like I have mice in my house. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like an infestation, huh?
Right. And not the good kind.
Well, Vera, interestingly enough, far and away the most common plural for the computer accessory that we use to move around the cursor, it is mice. Although you're not wrong, because some dictionaries will say either mice or mouses is okay. The original patent application for this device called it a position indicator control, and I'm really glad that we don't use that term anymore. Early on in the 1960s, tech workers came up with the term mouse because the little device is about the size of a mouse and is attached to the computer by a wire coming out of one end, so that it does resemble a rodent. But Vera, the truth is that Grant has had tons of experience in the tech world, and I'm sure that he has some thoughts along these lines.
All right, sit back now. Just to put it into perspective, I was there when the internet launched for the average person, and there training people how to use the internet and how to use desktop computers. Like when people switched over from paper to computers, I wow. trained people to do that. So they're at a really crucial time. And one of the things I noticed among my colleagues in the tech world is that they really delighted in saying mouses just because it irritated other people so much. And so for a while in the 90s, people really tried to force that mouses plural down the throats of everyone else, but it didn't really stick. And so mice has more or less replaced mouses, and mouses is kind of now this artifact. Mouses is this artifact of the 90s. But the Hacker's Dictionary, which I think is coming up on its 30th anniversary, is this revered kind of repository of computer industry wisdom and history and folklore, has a lot of really great examples of these really fun examples of unnecessarily complicated words and unnecessary plurals. For example, hackers and computer people like to say that the plural of mongoose should be polygoose. Because mono should become poly.
That sounds right.
And anyway, the plural of mouse isn't mice or mouses. It's Mises, M-E-E-C-E-S.
I'm beginning to like that better. Yeah.
Really, you do.
So, and that's one of the things I always loved about the tech world is that tech people, you know, they love to goof, and yeah. really that's kind of too what the trying to force the mouses plural was all about. It's just goofing.
Joking around.
Just, people, we all
yeah.
love to goof with language. We're just goofing.
And that's what's fun about language.
That is exactly yeah. what's fun about language.
Yeah.
And the diversity. I mean, I love that mouses feels natural to you, and that's what you use.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. I love being here.
All right. Be well. Take care of yourself.
You too, guys. Be safe. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear from you. Just tell us your thoughts about anything related to language. Email us words@waywardradio.org or chat with us on Twitter @WAYWORD. Hello. Welcome to Away with Words.
Hi. This is Steve Lee from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Happy to be here.
What can we do for you?
Well, I often heard my mother say an expression, and no one else. I never heard anyone else say it. When her style or taste or something was challenged, she would respond by saying, "Well, everybody to their own taste," said the old lady as she kissed the cow. And yeah, I'm curious about that. Where that came from? I never heard anybody else say it.
And how did that land in the discussion? Did she feel justified and satisfied?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Her hackles were up a little bit, but she smiled as she said it.
So give that to us again.
Everybody to their own taste, said the old lady as she kissed the cow.
Yeah, Grant, this is a perfect example of the kind of jokey statement that we call a wellerism.
A wellerism, yes.
A wellerism.
Yeah, and a wellerism has three different elements. It has the familiar saying or phrase or proverb, as you said, in this case, everybody to their own taste. And then it has somebody who says the phrase, which is the lady. And then finally, another few words that give it a twist, so it turns out to be funny. Another example of that would be the phrase, That's one way to look at it, said the mouse as she ran across the mirror. So it's one way to look. But you take the familiar expression that you're using in the conversation, and you just add that jokey element there.
So these are all Wellerisms.
Yeah, they're all Wellerisms. They've been around for millennia. They go all the way back to antiquity, and they're used all over the world in different ways. But the term Wellerism in English refers to Sam Weller, who was a popular character in the Charles Dickens novel, The Pickwick Papers. He was a Cockney guy who was always saying all these funny things like, "Hope our acquaintance may be a long one," as the gentleman said to the five-pound note. That is, you know, he'll use that in a conversation. You know, "Hope our acquaintance will be a long one." But then he adds that little part that makes it funny. So those are called Wellerisms, and that's what your mom was using.
Well, now, she was an avid reader lifelong, and even though she came from a very rural community, and she did have cows. They had cow after cow that she helped milk, and all the cows were named Nancy. But do you suppose that actual same one that I heard was in the novel?
It's not in the novel. It actually predates the novel by a number of years. It goes back to at least 1820. It's one of the classic Wellerisms, in fact. And you'll find it mentioned again and again when Wellerisms are discussed.
Well, listen, thank you so much. You've shed some light on sayings from my childhood.
We really appreciate it, Steve. Thank you for sharing your memories.
All right. You guys take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. You bye-bye. Too, Steve. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Martha, these remind me a lot of Russian anti-proverbs, which take a traditional proverb and put on a little twist ending. There's one, for example, which is, "One cannot earn all the money," which you say to someone who seems to work all the time and tries to make as much money as possible. But the anti-proverb version is, "One cannot earn all the money. Some will have to be stolen."
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Russian anti-proverb tends to have like this, you know, very meaningful proverb that's useful advice. And at the end of it is something dark and, you know, a little underground and maybe a little disrespectful. So "One cannot earn all the money. Some will have to be stolen."
It sort of sounds like, "He who hesitates is lost, so look before you leap."
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's an English anti-proverb. I just thought of that.
That's a really good one, though. 877-929-9673.
This show is about language seen through family, history, and culture. Stay tuned for more of Away with Words. Away with Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett. And there's a strange man on the other side of the country who keeps calling. And here he is again, our quiz guy, John Chinesky. Hi, John.
Hi, Grant. You keep calling me strange. I'm not. Okay, you're right. I'm strange. I admit it.
You're like 8 feet tall, hilarious.
I'm 8 feet
tall.
You
write for TV shows.
Yes.
And us.
I go crazy around dogs. Maybe that's so strange. But anyway, I have something very interesting for you today. Are you guys familiar with the term nominative determinism?
Sure.
Yes. Somebody has a name like Baker, and then it turns out that they work in a bakery.
Right, exactly. They're names as words. The hypothesis that people tend to gravitate towards areas of work that fit their names. Well, I'm going to give you a description of a famous person and the career they perhaps were destined or nominatively determined to enter. You tell me who it is, all right? Now, except for the first two, these are all phonetic. For example, can you imagine if the handsome Oscar-winning actor who was People's Sexiest Man Alive twice had followed his last name and become a gravedigger? That would have been a strange choice. Yes, it would have been a strange choice for Brad Pitt.
Oh, I thought it was going to be somebody named Doug.
Could have been someone named Doug Pitt, probably. Would have been a good job for him. We'll start in the past with some no longer living celebrities. Again, the first two are straightforward, not phonetic. What would cinema be like if one of the most famous movie comedians had decided to join the clergy, or more specifically, join the army and then take in orders?
Charlie Chaplin, of course.
Yes, Charlie Chaplin in the army. Way to go, Padre. All right. He only starred in three feature films, but I doubt he would have changed careers and become an administrator in a college or university. James Dean.
Oh. What'd you say, Martha? Harry Bursar?
Aaron Bursar.
Bursar. I can't wait for there to be a famous person named Bursar. All right, we'll consider you up to speed. Now, these are phonetic, though they're still in the past.
That's generous.
Here we go.
Okay.
Maybe when this glamorous actor was being fitted for one of her many grand costumes, she pined for a time when she herself could have custom fit clothes for customers.
Oh, Elizabeth Taylor,
yes. Okay, let's explore what some living celebrities might have done if they'd followed their namesake. What former president had many careers, but as far as I know, never transported goods on a horse-drawn vehicle?
Gerald Ford.
No, not Gerald Ford. No, this is, by the way, a living person.
Jimmy.
Oh, living person. Okay. Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter, right. A Carter. He could have helped the Bushes
living.
with their landscaping business, right. Finally, what movie and TV actor might have decided to become a jockey? At 5'3", she has the height, and I've seen Stranger Things.
Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder is correct. Anyway, you guys did really great. I'm glad you guys decided to become radio hosts instead of Grant becoming a nude model and Martha becoming working on a very, very tiny farm.
So. I would be a great nude model. You should see my rear.
I'm sure.
John, I don't think you're strange. You do wonderful puzzles.
Thank you very much.
Sometime soon, all right?
I'll take your call anytime. Very good.
As you can see, we do a lot of goofing around on this show, but we also talk about all aspects of language. So give us a call, 877-929-9673, or send your questions and stories about language to words@waywardradio.org. By the way, Grant, speaking of anadromes, those words that form different words if they're spelled backwards, that is the story behind the town of Ragic in Oregon. Actually, I think it's just maybe a little post office or something, but somebody named Ragic, this little area in Oregon, for, I guess, an interest in cigars.
Oh, Ragic is cigar backward. Okay.
Yeah, and apparently there's some place not that far from there called Eckham's, or at least it was an attempt to get a post office named Eckham's, which is smoke spelled backwards.
To follow on the cigar, I see.
Yes.
Just a little further down the rail line.
Yeah, I mean, there are those places. 877-929-9673.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, my name is Ruth, and I'm calling from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. But I grew up in South Carolina. I grew up close to my maternal grandparents. And my maternal grandparents, they were first-generation Americans. They were children of Swedish immigrants. In fact, they had both grown up in Minnesota around other Swedish immigrants. One of my favorite things about childhood with them was they had a faithful observance of a 3 p.m. coffee break. When they would gather at the kitchen table, they would drink a cup of coffee. They would have some fresh baked good that my grandma had made, usually just cookies. And they would just have this time every day. They referred to this coffee break, at least as my American English childhood mind heard it, as coffee docs. And when I asked them what they were saying, they would just repeat themselves and be like, coffee docs. And then they'd, yeah, it's Swedish. And then they'd move on. And so I never actually figured out what they were saying. As I've Googled it and tried to research it, I see there is this 3 p.m. coffee break, potentially even 10 a.m., but in Sweden, but it's called fika. And as I've looked at it, I don't know. It looks like the fika came into being like in the 1800s. And that would have been the late 1800s, would have been the time that my great-grandparents were immigrating over from Sweden. And I have wondered if there was another name for this coffee break before it was called fika, or what exactly my grandparents were saying to call this coffee break.
Well, Ruth, you said it's coffee docs. Is that what, how would you spell that?
Coffee docs is how I always heard it. And as far as it goes, like coffee, like the brown liquid in a cup, and then docks, like wooden piers out in water, which makes no sense, but that's how I always heard it.
Yeah, the word is actually kaffedags, which is K-A-F-F-E-D-A-G-S. And the kaffe part is, of course, coffee. The docks part is what's tripping you up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it makes a whole lot of sense if you know that the Swedish word dag, D-A-G, means day. And to make the genitive form of that, you just add an S to the end. So dags means of the day. And it's sort of like o'clock, you know. Kaffedags is the time of the day when you have coffee.
Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Did they actually use that as a term for this break before fika?
Sure, they use it now as well. And you can add that docs, the of the day, to mat, which means food. So mat docs is time for food. And you can also say fika docs, which is time for fika. And I'm glad that you brought up fika because it's a really fascinating social ritual that has a really interesting history. I mean, as you said, it's a scheduled pause in your day. And you don't just have it at your desk, right?
My grandparents, they gathered at the kitchen. If my grandfather was feeling especially social, he would go down to the local diner, the local donut shop, and sit at the counter with the other men and take his coffee there.
But
it was a very social time.
Yes, yes, exactly. Socializing is key to fika. And Sweden has this really interesting relationship with coffee. It was introduced in that country in the 1670s. And then within a few years, there were a lot of worries about coffee's effect on people's minds and health. And the fact that coffee houses became these social centers where people just might organize to overthrow the monarchy. And so coffee was heavily taxed in that country, and people refused to pay it. And by the mid-1700s, the king actually banned it entirely. But people found ways to get around this, of course, because it's coffee. Early on, there was a slang version of the Swedish word for coffee that was spelled K-A-F-F-I, and that eventually became the fika that you were talking about, F-I-K-A, fika, which is just a reversal of those syllables. It's a slang way of saying coffee, not coffee, but fika.
And then later, fika underwent another transition. You can now just say fik. You might say, vi tar ett fik. We're having a coffee. So this word has traveled many roads.
Oh, Ruth, well, thank you so much for this memory. So the coffee docs is just coffee of the day, the time of day that you have the coffee.
Well, thank you so much. That shed so much light onto what, you know, I was always mishearing. So thank you.
Well,
thank
keep
you
up
for
the
call.
Tradition.
Really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
I will certainly try. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Speaking of conversation, we'd love to have one with you about language, so call us 877-929-9673 or send your thoughts in email. The address is words@waywardradio.org. I've been savoring some of the exquisite work of poet Jay Wright, and that sent me back to an interview that he gave in the 1980s to the literary magazine Kalalu, a journal of African diaspora arts and letters. And he said, "A young man hearing me read some of my poems said that I seemed to be trying to weave together a lot of different things. My answer was that they are already woven. I'm just trying to uncover the weave." And Grant, I just love that image of it all being out there, but he's trying to uncover the weave to see what is before him.
Yeah, that's perfect. So much of life is about that, right? Mm-hmm. It's uncovering the mind of the author. That's what reading is, or uncovering the secrets of a profession by learning its jargon, or a lot of what you and I do on this show is uncovering the histories of migration patterns because the language traveled with them, or mm-hmm. the secrets of a family that somebody wants to share in their anecdotes when they talk about funny words that they've been passing from generation to generation. Absolutely. All these different woven fabrics in all these different places. It's a great metaphor. Love it.
Trying to uncover the weave. Well, if there's a passage in literature that's really struck you lately, we'd love to hear about it. 877-929-9673, or send it to us in email. The address is words@waywardradio.org. Hi, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Clint from Dallas.
Hey, Clint, welcome.
What's going on?
Thanks. Well, I have a question about a family tradition that is, when somebody has a birthday, this is usually done with kids. The person giving the present puts a present on top of the other kid's head, or the birthday boy or girl, and says a funny little phrase, "Heavy, heavy hangover, thy poor head, what do you wish this donor?" So once, after this little funny phrase, and the present still sitting on top of the kid's head, the birthday kid is supposed to wish the giver of the gift something. And it's usually meant to be something amazing or spectacular. I don't know, a unicorn, a bag of diamonds, your own airplane, something fanciful. Then it's over. Then you hand the present to the kid and he tears through it, and that's it. But I have no idea where this tradition came from. And my mom thought my dad brought it from his growing up, and my dad thought my mom brought it from her growing up. So they're both denying where they got this thing from. But I would like to know. You guys know lots of stuff. So any ideas?
Yes. Yes, indeed. But let's hear the phrase one more time.
Heavy, heavy hangover, thy poor head, what do you wish this donor?
Donor at the end. Is that D-O-N-O-R, do you think?
Yes. I mean, like, blood donor, or that kind of donor. Okay. It's. I Googled it, a couple years ago. And I think somebody had a slightly different version. They were asking the same kind of question, but nobody seemed to have any answers. So,
you know, we often cross over into folklore territory on the show, and this is one of those times. This started as a kissing game in the 1850s.
Okay.
So the way that it worked as a kissing game, there were a lot of variations, and as all folklore and kind of children's games go, it's changed and modified over the years and come down to us by many different paths. But in general, what would happen would be a group of kids, say teen or preteen. There'd be a leader, and there'd be a judge, and there'd be a person who was it out of all the kids. And everyone would put something personal in a hat, say a bit of jewelry or a pin that they were wearing, or something like that. And the person who is it sits down. The leader holds the hat over their head and draws something from the hat. And then the leader says to the judge, "Heavy, heavy, what hangs over you?" And the judge says, "Okay, either fine or super fine. If it's fine, it belongs to a boy or a man. If it's super fine, it belongs to a girl or a woman." And then they have to, whoever's it has to do, it's what's called a forfeit. Do you know this word, a forfeit? It's when you have to pay a penalty. One of them is to go to Rome, which if it's a boy, he'll have to kiss every girl in the room. Another one, which I love this expression, measure yards of tape and cut it off. They'll have to kiss each other with arms extended. And there's a whole bunch more of these. So it's there's complicated versions of this that get even more in depth. In any case, so there's a lot of different versions of this kissing game. Over the years, this has come down to us as the present version, which you're talking about, where people hold a present over a head and people either have to guess what's in it or they have to make a wish for somebody in the room. Some people say, what are you going to do with the bump on your head instead of what do you wish on this present? And I think where the what do you wish this donor that you that you say comes from an older version of this saying, which is.
Yeah, I guess the game that's on is the right game. It does not say live on the screen, so I was confused. Anyway, I'll put the game on. It's in the second quarter right now. Sorry about that, folks.
Six. Matacotis leading. Rowdy Tripp taking it inside. Looking for a foul on that one, but couldn't get it. Rebounded by Manicotic. Manicotic has the ball on their side. Nevaeh Glocko pass to the left. Donovan Glocko pass to the corner. A little jump shot from Jethro Nanaluk. No good. Rebounded by Manicotic. Number three, Nevaeh Glocko with a three-point attempt. No good. Sandpoint's got the rebound and a foul called there. A number 23, Rowdy Tripp. So that foul was on the ground. It's going to be a Sandpoint ball under the Manicotic basket. Foul on number 13 for Manicotic, Keaton Park. Rowdy Tripp bringing the ball off the court for Sandpoint. He's going to go to the right. Viscocho back to Tripp to the corner. Kalugin's got it. Back to Viscocho on the right side of the court. Kalugin up to the top. Rowdy Tripp driving inside. Floater from Tripp. No good. Rebounded by Manicotic. Oh, and by Gunderson. Gunderson taking it inside. A nice steal and dump there by Gunderson. 2 points for Sandpoint. Score is 19-8. Manicotic with an 11-point lead. Timeout called by Manicotic. Both teams are going to head back to the bench. Talk it over. We have about 5.5 minutes left here in the second quarter. Some excellent play on both sides of the ball. As far as scoring goes, top scorers tonight. Nevaeh Glocko for Manicotic with 9 points, close to getting over that double digits range. For Sandpoint, Jeremy McGlashan, our high scorer, with 4. And our only other two scorers are Peter Kalugin, number 42, with 2, and Tyler Gunderson with 2 points there right before the timeout. So, overall, good team effort by the Lynx. Sandpoint struggling to score a little bit here, but starting to get into their rhythm. So, we'll see how this remainder of the second quarter goes. Sandpoint seated at the number 2 spot in this tournament, coming into the tournament with an 8-4 record, 6-3 in the conference. So definitely a strong team and has a good chance to make it to the state tournament this year. Both teams taking the court right now. It's going to be a Manicotic ball at half court. So ball is inbounded to Nanaluk. Nanaluk looking for Glocko down low. He's going to pass it outside. And that three-pointer is good. Donovan Glocko had it outside in the corner for a nice three-pointer. 22-8. Manicotic leading this game. Sandpoint has the ball passing around the perimeter. They've got Kalugin down low. Kalugin passes out to Tripp. Tripp driving inside. Back to Kalugin. Kalugin shot. Good. Peter Kalugin with 2 points. Nice jump shot from him. Manicotic ball. Jethro Nanaluk passing the ball around the perimeter. Nevaeh Glocko with the ball. Dribbling right. Nanaluk, top of the key. Jump shot from him is good. Beautiful finish by Nanaluk there. 24-10. Lynx winning this game by 14. Sandpoint passing around the perimeter. No look pass from Viscocho to McGlashan. But McGlashan's going to step out of bounds, forcing the Sandpoint turnover. The Manicotic ball coming the other way. Jethron Nanaluk passing to the right. Back to Nanaluk. Nanaluk looking at the top of the key. There's a three-point attempt from Glocko. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. They've got an open man down low. It's McLaughlin. McLaughlin fadeaway jump shot. No good. Rebound by Nanaluk. Nanaluk picking it the other way for the Lynx. Nanaluk pull-up three. No good. Rebounded by Peter Kalugin for Sandpoint. Rowdy Tripp has the ball now. Taking it down the court for Sandpoint. Back to Tripp. Over to Gunderson. Gunderson's got McLaughlin in the short corner. McLaughlin to Tripp up top. Tripp pulls up. No, he's going to pass to Kalugin. Kalugin, Muscocho. Muscocho to Gunderson. Gunderson on the left side of the perimeter. Looking for Tripp. Tripp to Muscocho. Back to Tripp. Tripp's up McLaughlin in the short corner. He's going to pull up for a jump shot. No good. And Nevaeh Glocko trying to get that rebound, but it's going to bounce off his hands and go out of bounds. So it will stay a Sandpoint ball. A little bit of frustration on the Manicotic side here. Rowdy Tripp from the corner. Is that? So a little bit of confusion there on that play. There was a out-of-bounds call, but the Port Huron's an alien is too short, so they brought it back. Beautiful play there by Viscocho. Viscocho had the ball. Nicely placed pass to Rowdy Tripp down low. He's going to go up for the layup, but is fouled. So Rowdy Tripp heading to the line, looking for two free throws here. First one is good by Tripp. Looks like Tripp might have got poked in the eye or something. He's rubbing his face. But first free throw is good, so he's going to stay in the game here. Tripp, second free throw attempt is no good. Rebound by Nevaeh Glocko. Glocko dribbling to the right. 24-11, Lynx leading this game. Glocko, pull-up jump shot. No good. Rebounded by Nanaluk. Nanaluk with the putback bucket. 26-11. 2 minutes and 55 seconds remain in this second quarter. Sandpoint has the ball. Looking in the corner at Kalugin. Kalugin, pass back to Gunderson. Gunderson to Kalugin. Kalugin, short corner, jump shot, no good. McLaughlin with the rebound. He's going to pass to Viscocho. He's going to pass to Gunderson. Gunderson to McLaughlin at the three-point line. McLaughlin to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp driving inside. Jump shot from Tripp. No good. Rebound by McLaughlin. Back out to Tripp. Over to Gunderson. Gunderson, three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by the Lynx. Trying to get Michael Poole, but it's stolen by Rowdy Tripp. Tripp's going to pass to Kalugin. He's going to pass to Gunderson. Gunderson taking his time. Going to pass to Viscocho, bringing the ball slowly up the court. Rowdy Tripp with a fake from him. He's driving inside. Pull-up jump shot. Good. Rowdy Tripp has got 2 points for the Eagles, taking the lead for Sandpoint, 13-11. Michael Poole, deep three-pointer. He pulled up right there, and that's good. Michael Gould feeling it tonight. Score is 13-14. Sandpoint with the ball. Rowdy Tripp dribbling on the right side of the court. He picks up his dribble looking for a man. He's got McLaughlin down low. It's good. McLaughlin pulled up from the short corner. Little jump shot. It's good. Sandpoint leads now 15-14. This game continues to go back and forth. Michael Gould driving inside. Fouled on the way up. So Michael Gould going to go to the line for another pair of free throws here. 15-14, the lead has been going back and forth, back and forth. I mean, what else do you expect from two teams that have been facing each other all season? This is their 10th game playing each other. Michael Gould, first free throw is good. And there's a sub here for Sandpoint. Number three, Capo Kamingana, coming in for number one, Jeremy McLaughlin. So Michael Gould, second free throw. Here is good. So both free throws come good. Gould are good. Score is 15-16. King Cove with a 1-point lead. this Gocho with the ball for Sandpoint. He's going to pass to the right. Tripp has it now. Over to Kevin Ghana. Over to Viscocho. Viscocho deep three. No, rebounded by Gould. Michael Gould taking it the other way for King Cove. Gould. Pull up three-pointer. No good. He's going to get his other rebound. Put up a floater. No good. Rebounded by Kaluga. Playing ball. It's on the ground, though. Officials call it a jump ball. And Sandpoint has possession, so they're going to take it under the King Cove basket. Kaluga inbounds to Tripp. Taking his time, bringing the ball off the court. 50 seconds remain in the first quarter. Score 15-16. King Cove with the 1-point lead. Gunderson in the corner. He's got it. Ball's on the ground. Gunderson recovers. Viscocho swings it over. Kaluga has it. Corner. Over to Tremagana. Rappy Tripp. Okay. Looking inside. Pull-up shot for Rappy Tripp. He's got it. Sandpoint has the lead. 17-16. 30 seconds left. Michael Gould. Thompson on the right elbow. 19-16. 12 seconds remain. Sandpoint going to try and get the last shot of the game here. Rowdy Tripp looking. He's got this Gocho on the left. 4 seconds left. 2 seconds left. Good. 17-18. King Cove with a very small 1-point lead here in Port Allsworth. Remember, winner goes home. Excuse me. Winner advances to the state tournament. Loser goes home. So a very important game for both of these teams. So far, high scorer on the King Cove side, Michael Gould with 9 points. An impressive performance from him. And Robert Thompson, number 34, the big man with 4 points.
Okay, you probably figured it out here. We got the right game on now. It was the old one that was playing, but I started recording it. Anyway, we got it figured out on this end. Sorry for the technical mess up. This does happen on occasion. All this new technology is a bit new to us way out west here, right?
King Cove is going to start with the ball for this second quarter. Number 15, Brandon Larson, inbound for the T-Shacks. He's going to pass to Michael Gould. Gould has the ball. Number scored 17-18. King Cove with a 1-point lead here. Gould passes to Larson. Larson, three-pointer. It's good. Beautiful shot there from Brandon Larson. 17-21. He still has a 4-point lead. This coach over Sandpoint, dribbling the ball before. Is it over to the right? Rowdy Tripp. Rowdy Tripp. Off 8. And 3-point attempt for a minute is good. Rowdy Tripp. The chip to go 20-21. Gould has the ball passing inside. Taylor Gould passes to Larson. Larson to Wilson. Wilson to Larson. Larson back out to Gould. Gould pulls up. It's good. Michael Gould on fire right now. 20-24. King Cove leading this one. Viscocho of Sandpoint has the ball. Passing to Rowdy Tripp on the right side. Tripp, dribbling, trying to work it inside. Back to Viscocho. Viscocho, three-pointer is good. IU Viscocho, pull-up, jump shot three. 23-24. Both these teams getting competitive. This is an important game for all these players. King Cove with possession. Michael Gould driving inside, back out to Larson. He's got a 3-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. Viscocho missed the rebound. He's fouled while dribbling it out. So that foul is going to be called on number 1-3, Sailor Gould. Foul is on the ground. Sandpoint's ball coming the other way. So Ryu Viscocho passes to the right to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp going to go cross-court pass to Gunderson, back to Viscocho, over to Kamdana, out to Tripp. Tripp driving inside, he's going to go cross-court. Viscocho, three-pointer! No good. Kaluga with the rebound, though. Kaluga stepped in the line. Oh, excuse me. Looks like that was a foul on King Cove. Shoved Kaluga a little bit there on that rebound. So Sandpoint is going to get the ball under their own basket. 23, Rowdy Tripp inbounding for the Eagles. Tripp looking for a man. He's got Kaluga. on the outside of the perimeter. Lugan dribbling right, hand off to Kamigana. Kamigana to the left, Gunderson. Gunderson to Viscocho. Viscocho back to Kamigana, over to Rowdy Tripp. He's driving inside, looking for the foul, not going to get it. Michael Gould with the ball, taking it in. He's got Iapana down low, wide open. That's 2 points for Logan Iapana, number one. 23-26, King Cove with the three-point lead. Standpoint with the ball. Rowdy Tripp passes to the left. Viscocho with the ball back to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp dribbling, looking for something, calling for a screen. Coming down with the ball over to Viscocho. Viscocho pump fake. He's got Peter Kalugin down low, wide open. He's going to dump to Gunderson. Gunderson's got a nice shot there from inside the key. 25-26, one-point game. I'm still with the lead. Riley Wilson has the ball, dribbling to the right, over to Larson. Larson to Sailor Gould. Back to Larson. Larson, three-pointer. No good. Rebound by Peter Kalugin. Kalugin to Kamigana. Kamigana's got Rowdy Tripp. Tripp pulls up from the middle of the key. He's got it. That point takes the lead, 27-26. 5 minutes left in the second quarter. Michael Gould jumps it to number one. Down low. No good. Rowdy Tripp, the rebound. He's going to pass out to Gunderson. Gunderson has the ball from Sandpoint, trying to slow it down. Kalugin passes to Tripp. Sandpoint getting their offense set up here. Viscocho over to Kamigana. Kamigana to Tripp on the left side of the court to the corner. Viscocho's shot is no good. Rebound by Gunderson, though. And it's stolen by Larson. So Brennan Larson rips the ball there. Standpoint stands in. It's going to take it the other way for King Cole. 27-26. Larson with the ball, driving inside, looking for a man. He picked up his dribble. Larson's got Wilson. Wilson to Gould. Gould guarded by Gunderson. Larson wide open. That three-pointer good for Brennan Larson, number 15. Scores 27-29. Larson with a pair of clutch three-pointers in this quarter. Viscocho passes to Kamigana. Kamigana to the corner. Peter Kalugin has got it. Back to Kamigana. Back to Viscocho. Going around the perimeter. Rowdy Tripp's got Gunderson in the corner. Back to Tripp. Ball being passed around the perimeter. And Tripp was looking for Kalugin down low, but it's going to go off the hands of T-Jax player. Number 34, Robert Thompson, coming in for the T-Jax. He's going to sub in for number 13, Sailor Gould. Standpoint inbounding the ball. They've got Viscocho on the perimeter. He's going to pass to Gunderson. Back to Kamigana. Rowdy Tripp with it at the short corner. Pull up jump shot. No good. Rebound by Larson. King Cove's ball. 27-29. King Cove leads this by two. Deep three-pointer from Michael Gould. No good. Hits the backboard and is rebounded by Rowdy Tripp. But Tripp's got Gunderson in the corner. Back to Viscocho. Viscocho cannot miss tonight. Ryu Viscocho getting the lead for the Eagles, 30-29, off of that three-pointer from Viscocho. King Cove with the ball. Larson dribbling. He's got big man Thompson down low. Thompson has it. And he is fouled. Robert Thompson fouled down low. So King Cove will take the ball out under their own basket. Brennan Larson, number 15, for the D-backs inbounding. Larson looking for a man. He's got Gould out on the three-pointer. Gould dumps to Thompson. Thompson down low. He's got it. Nice post move there from Thompson to get that 2 points. Fouled on the way up, so he's going to go to the line. A chance for a three-point play here. 32-29, King standpoint. Excuse me, looks like there's a change in the score. 30-29. Standpoint leading the game by one. Robert Thompson with a chance to tie this game up. No good. Standpoint gets the rebound. Rowdy Tripp the other way. Pass to Gunderson. Gunderson to Tripp. Tripp to Viscocho. Viscocho to the corner. Coming out a three-pointer. No good. Rebounded by the team guys. Mike Gould's got it. Excuse me, looks like there was an error in the scoreboard. They just fixed that. The score is 30-31. T-Dax actually with the lead. So number four, Michael Gould has the ball. He's going back to Larson. Larson over to Gould. Three-pointer attempt by him. No good. Rebounded by Iatana. Iatana's got Gould. Pass it back out. Brendan Larson has the ball. Three-pointer attempt from him. It's good. Larson has been on fire tonight. Three three-pointers from him. King Joe with a four-point lead now, 30-34. Jacks on top of this one. Rowdy Tripp drives inside. Jump shot from him is no good. That was contested. King Joe has the ball, bringing it the other way. Michael Bull dribbling to the left into Thompson. And Thompson was moving his feet a little bit before the ball, so travel called on King Cove. It's going to be a 10-point fall. 30-34. King Cove leading this one. We only have 1 minute and 20 seconds remaining in the first half. Sam playing with the ball. Descocho has it on the left side. Pass to Tripp. Dribbling. Cross-court pass to Gunderson. Gunderson passing it to the right. Ball's going around the perimeter. Tripp driving inside. And he was going for the foul, for the shot there, but he's going to be fouled on the way up. So, Rowdy Tripp heading to the line for Sam Point. A chance to make this a two-point game. And looks like the officials are going to change the call. It's actually going to be on the ground, so Sam Point will take the ball out under their own hoop. Rowdy Tripp inbounding for the Eagles. Tripp's got Kalugin out deep. Kalugin to Gunderson. Gunderson to Kamangana in the corner. Dribbling to the right. Kalugin, three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by Thompson for King Cove. So King Cove bringing it the other way. Under a minute remaining in this second quarter. And King Cove passed it back to Brendan Larson, but he was not quite over the half-court mark yet, so it's going to be an over and back call. Sandpoint has the ball. 30-34. 47 seconds remain in the second quarter. Viscocho to Kalugin, back to Viscocho. Viscocho looking. He's got Rowdy Tripp on the right side of the court. Tripp, cross court pass to Gunderson. Viscocho shot. No good. Rebounded by Kamangana. Kamangana to Tripp. 28 seconds left. Pass out to Viscocho. Gunderson's got it. Out to Kamangana. Kamangana driving inside out to Viscocho. Three-pointer from Viscocho. It's good. Viscocho. Four three-pointers this game. 8 seconds left. 33-34. Team Cove with a one-point lead. Michael Keaton pulled up. It's good. Pull up three-pointer from Gould. Full court shot there. Attempt by Rowdy Tripp. He's going to hit one of the speakers on the top of the gym ceiling there. So 33-37. A clutch three-pointer for Michael Gould to end the first half. King Cove on top of this one. Wow, some incredible play on both sides of the ball. Let's go into our scoring breakdown for this first half. Top scorer for Sam Point tonight, Ryu Viscocho. 4 three-pointers from him. He cannot miss tonight.
This program is brought to you by Jim and Trudy Brown's Apartments. Located in Sandpoint above Trident Seafood.
Rowdy Tripp, number 23, our second top scorer with 13 points. After that, Tyler Gunderson, number 0, with 2 points. Jeremy McLaughlin, number 1, with 2 points. And Peter Kalugin, 42, with 2 points. Let's take a look at the TJAX scoring breakdown here. Top scorer for tonight, number 4, Michael Gould, knows the prize there. He's been having an incredible tournament thus far. He's got 50. Number 15, Brennan Larson with 11. And number 34, Larson with 6. Lucky Wilson, number 3, with 3 points. And Morgan Iapana, number 1, with 2 points. As far as fouls go, number 1, Logan Iapana with 1 foul. Riley Wilson, number 3,